Yeah, this is Dan Zhang with Subversity here on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Today we're going to be interviewing a film festival curator from Indonesia. And welcome to the show, John Bedalu.
Thank you.
John, you're responsible for something called Q-Fest. How did you get into this hosting of a gay film festival?
Well, it started from my family. They really love watching films. So since I was a kid, I'm used to already watch a lot of films. So then I decided, okay, I really want to work in the film industry. So I started working as a volunteer in the Jakarta International Film Festival.
What year was that?
That was in the year 1999. It's the first year of the Jakarta International Film Festival. And then from there, I learned how to organize a film festival. And I have this idea that it should be great if we could do like another film festival, but with a more specific theme and still showing like alternative films and independent films. So with a few friends, we come up with the queer themes, which we think would be really, really rare or almost impossible to see any queer films in Indonesia. So, and we got some supports from the foreign cultural centers, like German cultural centers, the Goethe Institute, and also the French cultural center. So from then on, we decided, okay, let's do it. So we started in the year 2002.
So this is an alternative to the regular Indonesian film festival, because did they show many gay films there?
They never shown any gay films. We have a very strict censorship board, which control most of the film screenings in Indonesia, so they don't dare to screen any queer films in the festival.
But in your festival, you can show anything?
Yes.
How is that possible?
We kind of do it a little bit more underground. We didn't really promote the event like in a lot of medias, because also most of the venues are not really a proper cinema. It's more like a black box theater, so we can mostly screen everything. So we started like that, and then it became bigger and bigger. And of course, suddenly we got a national attention, including from the censorship board. So then just this year, they realized that the Q-Fest has been going on for 6 years, and they didn't know about it from the beginning. But I've studied also the law and the law of the film industry, like how to get away from the censorship board. And so when they asked me to come to their office to tell me that it has to be banned, your festival, and I said, no, we don't actually violate any rules, violate any laws, because what we did was it's a free screening, so it's not considered commercial, because everything about commercial screenings have to be censored, and we are not commercial. And we said it's only for our members, which is the Q Film Festival members, so it's not open really for public. So then they said, okay, well, then you can go on, you can screen whatever without censorship. It's, you don't violate any laws. So basically, we are okay now in terms of censorship. So we can screen everything, even the nudity scene, even the sex scene, we can all put it in.
Wow, that's wonderful. It reminds me of this club in Hanoi, also Hanoi Cinematheque. A similar situation. It was a membership only group, even though they did advertise, and it was so successful. that the cultural ministry took it over, and and now it's and they're showing anything, basically. But all DVDs, and I think Hollywood doesn't care because it's a private club, and in theory they would, you know, they would care about any kind of intellectual property issue. It's not, you know, getting duplicated or anything. I mean, in terms of the piracy, it's just being shown in a really nice theater.
Well, what we do is we usually don't screen a lot of Hollywood films. Maybe there are only like one or two titles in the end. We prefer like to screen mostly independent films.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And we go the proper way. We ask for permissions to screen the films from the owner of the films or the rights holders of the films.
So right. So yeah. you go through that procedure, and do they give you the DVDs usually? Do they have to apply to get into the festival, or you look for them?
I'm the one who mostly look for them, and I usually ask. It depends. It's really sometimes like we have to pay, sometimes we don't. Uh-huh. And also like, for example, the French films, it's the French embassies who supported it. So they were the one who shipped the film from France for us in 35mm. And then,
so it's not just DVD?
No, mostly in DVDs. Yeah. 95% are in DVDs. But we do have like... 2-3 films in 35mm.
Do you have the equipment, or do you use a theater?
Starting this year, we started to use a commercial cinema, a commercial theater, as our screening venues. It's one of them.
Wow.
So actually, we can screen the 35mm, even if it's like the theater space in Goethe Institute, they can screen in 35mm.
Wow. How does can they join on the spot?
Yeah, it's basically just a formality. If you are not a member, you just go there and say, I would like to be a member, and whatever. It's just like writing your name, address, and your email address, and that's actually for our database.
Do they have to, is there a membership fee?
No, nothing.
Oh, so it's really free.
It's really like, yeah, free of charge, free screenings.
So it must be... It draws a lot more people than if it was fee-based.
Yeah, a lot of people said that it depends. There are two ways. If it's free, then people really don't take it too seriously. But if it's paid, then people say, oh, like, okay, well, maybe I would like to go and have a look because it's something that, you have to pay for. So, but we would like to make it still for free.
Yeah, yeah.
Because what I would like to do is like for the audience not to think like how much money do I have if I want to see like 20 films or all the films in the festivals. In Indonesia, it's still like that. If you if they want to see like really every day for 10 days, our festival is 10 days, then they will spend some money anyway. So we don't want that.
Yeah, yeah.
We want them to feel free, like, to watch 5 films a day if they want to.
Yeah, because, like, mainstream things like AFI and other other venues, or other activities, they require you to buy a festival pass if you want to see everything.
Right.
And it could really add up. It's quite expensive.
Yeah. And, yeah, our festival is not like that. It's not the same concept.
Oh, definitely, yeah. So it's like a guerrilla theater kind of festival.
Exactly,
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And do you try to focus on the region or do you try to is there a focus on Southeast Asia?
It's getting more and more. It's for the past 2 years we try to screen more Southeast Asian films, but also it's not easy. A lot of them sometimes don't want to give their films for free. And it's a matter of strategy as well for each film.
Sure.
Sometimes they want to have their film to be premiered in Busan if it's in Asia. If it's premiered in our festival, then Busan wouldn't take it. So things like that. So they really have to consider. But for us, it's very laid back. We don't care from what year of the production the film is.
For sure, yeah.
We will still screen it. But we would like also to have a flavor of... world cinema, so it's not only from the region.
Right.
So we definitely, every year, we try to have a short compilation from Brazil, for example, because we have the same kind of collaboration. It's not written, but it's like we exchange programs. So I try to compile films from Asia for them to be presented in their festival.
Is that a gay festival?
And they also do the same. So they compile some films for
in
us.
In Rio?
In Sao Paulo.
Sao Paulo.
Yeah. But it's actually a touring festival. They are not only in Sao Paulo. They travel around in three other cities in Brazil. And so is our festival. We also don't only do it in Jakarta. We are now in four cities.
Wow.
Yeah.
How do you get funded for that then? I mean, you mentioned the Goethe Institute and the French Embassy, which funds getting of the film. Do they also give you support to run the festival?
Not really. They basically just give the space for free to have the film screenings. They contribute some films from their countries. But apart from that, it's really like for the last 2 years, especially, it's mostly from individuals, from just people who want to support the festival. Our festival budget is really, really small, and we try to get everything for free or a barter.
Oh, I see.
So, exchange. I think what we need so far is only like the money to print like the catalog of the festival, but all the volunteers are not paid.
How big is the? How many films are usually shown?
It's approximately around 80 films. That's including shorts.
Wow, that's incredible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the AFI was limiting itself to 150 films this time.
Right.
Supposedly, I don't know if that counts shorts or not, but so that's really amazing.
There was one point, I think in 2004, we screened like 135 films.
So it's like a year-long thing. It's not just, I mean, you have to work on it the whole year, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a full-time job. Yeah, it's a full-time job.
So I mean, how do you support yourself?
I do work for other film festivals also. But I mean, even if it's a full-time job doing this festival, but actually, it's not like you have to sit on it like 8 hours a day to do it.
It's to pay attention to.
Yeah, it's just like, I think 3 months before the festival, then it's becoming quite intense. Then you can't take other jobs at the same time. But for the rest of the year, you can still like work with other festivals.
What month is it?
In Jakarta, it's Jakarta and Bali. It's in August, September usually. And then in Yogyakarta, it's in March or April. And then in Surabaya, it's in May.
Wow.
And next year, we are adding another city, Bandung. So it will be five.
What month would that be in?
It will be in February.
Oh, wow.
So then it will be quite one full year. Like February, March, April, May, and then August.
Do you have local people there who would handle it in those cities?
Yes. We definitely always look for a local partner in each city. So at least they will do the logistics in the city. And from Jakarta, we bring the films to them.
It's not an academic festival, right?
It's not at all.
So you're trying to reach out to the community.
Yes. Yeah. It's open.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. So what is the makeup of the audience, say, in Jakarta?
We were quite surprised when we first did it in 2002. We didn't expect that there would be a lot of people who would be interested. And also, we really try to be very careful and only promote it really, really, like, we don't promote it that big.
Like low-key?
We are very low-key, but 80% of the screenings are full house.
Wow.
So then we were like, wow, this is plenty of people that we have to reject because it's exceeding the capacity of the places. It's not a big capacity, it's like 100 seats or still, something. But still, like, we didn't expect that it would be full. And so, like, this year, the last one in August, it's 90% full house for all the screenings.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, wow. So... It's pretty, pretty good. It's pretty impressive. It's double from last year, the number of audience.
What's the age range of the audience people?
The age range is usually from 20 to 30. Mm. Yeah.
How about the ethnicity? Is it mostly local people? Is it expats? Is it?
It's only mostly local people. Mm. We got some expats, but you can really spot them. It's only like one or two in in each room screenings.
Do you have to do offer interpretation or translation or subtitling or what happens there?
No, we still don't have budget for that.
Yeah, really.
So everything is still with English subtitles. Mm. So we can only reach basically the educated people in the country. But that's what makes me really sad, because I really want even the low class people to go and watch the films, because it's free anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
We had one documentary film on transvestite, and some transvestite in the country really want to see the film, but they couldn't speak a word of English, and. So what we did was we tried to explain the story in front before the film starting, like just the main idea of the film or like the main synopsis of the film, for them to at least understand what is it all about, and then they watch it. But in the future, we would like to do subtitling in Indonesian. Technically, it's still very, very difficult, and it's economically still very, very expensive.
Yeah. What they do in Hanoi is it's like a UN meeting. They have headphones, and for some of the films, they actually have the audio of somebody actually reading it in the projection booth and reading the subtitles that they have created and reading it out.
I strongly don't recommend that. Because for me, it's really disturbing while you are trying to watch the visuals, but you don't get the audio, the original audio from the film, because you got these headphones trying to translate.
Oh, you can't, it blocks it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, even if it's not blocked, but then you got too many sources, like in front of the screen, you got the voice of the original sound of the film, you got from your headphone, it's like the translator trying to talk, and they have to talk fast, they have to translate fast, and...
I think they're from doing it from a script.
Okay.
I mean, it's already written down before.
Right, right.
So they don't do it for every film, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think... But
it's a compromise, you know. Otherwise, people might not
It is, actually. It, yeah. Yeah, it is. But I prefer not to do it. Because for me, you have to see a film in full version as it is.
I know, I hate the... I know in some countries they dub the films, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I always hate that, because I want to get the local flavor, original flavor.
Exactly. Yeah. So I really, I prefer not to do it at all.
Yeah, yeah, I can see your point.
Do it properly with subtitles, and that's it.
Yeah, and that's really expensive.
Yeah.
There's a company in LA, actually, that subtitles films from all over the world, because I had heard of students working there, and they get TV series from Vietnam, even. That they would subtitle, and so it's really, I'm sure they must charge a lot. It's a lot of work, actually.
Yeah, well, for us, the fee of a translator is not that expensive. It's more expensive is the technical side of it, to rent the LCD projector to project it down there, and then you need a laptop and you need a program to do it, and we don't have a programmer for
and
the.
You need a projector. That's so expensive.
Yeah, and you need an operator who is in there and try to do it there. All the time.
Yeah, that's right.
So, and because we are all not paid,
volunteer.
So we are all volunteers, so that's a bit difficult. Unless if we have the money, which. This year we got a big support from HIFOS. It's. A funding organizations from Holland, who usually give money to quote-unquote third world countries for arts events. This year we got some from them, and they said they are committed for the next 5 years.
Wow, that's great.
So all we have to do is just to submit again a budget for next year, and we might try to include the subtitling as well and see how it goes.
Do you see yourself as pioneering in this effort, or did you see other festivals doing this before or are still doing this? Are there other gay festivals that are doing this?
I guess I cannot say I'm a pioneer. There are so many queer film festivals all around the world. But I guess when I started it, I didn't know.
Yeah, sure.
That's the thing. I was just like, okay, well, I think we need to screen some queer-themed films. So then... It's the idea was like that. So then we started to do it. But then I just discovered after a year doing that actually there are plenty in the world, and I didn't know.
I guess there are a whole range. There are some very mainstream now, you know, like the Frameline is pretty big.
Yeah, and the ones in the US are mainly like quite commercial, let's say.
Yeah, commercialized. Definitely. Yeah. What makes you want to avoid the commercial? Because you're not interested in Hollywood type stuff, right?
I think because I prefer to show some works from unknown directors, for example, and I think Hollywood films are more formulaic, so I don't really like it. But we do to one or two. Like we did screen Brokeback Mountain, for example.
I think I saw you showed me the program from last year.
So yeah, we did that. Yeah. But also because that film was bought anyway by the Indonesian distributor, so we could just get the rights from them. So But yeah, in general, I prefer really to support like independent filmmaking. But anything about queer, we try, but not like the two commercial ones, or let's say, if it's really just like flashing the flesh and without any strong stories in there, let's forget about it. If it's just about like good-looking boys running around naked, forget it. We are not going to screen that.
So you don't necessarily screen all the, like I guess the gay Asian porn films that proliferate. I mean there's some series that are aimed at non-Asians, I guess, maybe. Mm-hmm. And so you don't go out and look for those necessarily.
Depends. Yeah, it depends on the reason. Like for example, we did screen Bruce LaBruce's film, which has a lot of sex scenes.
Sure.
But it's not a porn film.
Right.
It's very graphic. They showed everything, but for us, it's a film.
Raspberry
Rye. Yeah. We even screened Skin Flick before as well.
You know, I thought that was about the Third Reich. So I actually went to a midnight showing in LA with a bunch of people, and I had no idea what it was about. And anyway,
yeah, it was fun. I think when we screen it, first we put it as a surprise film. We didn't tell anybody that what it was. So everybody was like, "Oh, surprise film! We didn't know. Let's just watch it." But then, just the first 5 minutes, the owner of the cinema was sweating. It's like, is this the right film? Isn't it like a porn film? I'm sure you brought the wrong DVD or something. It's like, no, this is the right one. He was really like panicking because he didn't expect that we would screen something like that.
Yeah,
that was like 3 years ago, but now he was like, surprise film, okay, I'm prepared, so whatever you have.
Got over the shock.
Yeah.
What are the ones that can you talk about some of the other ones that have stood out that are from the area that we wouldn't know about here? You think are there others that you?
We also tried to discover a lot of Indonesian films. I think most of the directors even don't know how they're going to screen their films, because there are no way that they could do it. I think the first one in the first year when we did our festival, we heard about this film that was banned in the end by a TV station because it has a lesbian content in it. And actually, that was a commission work from the TV station. But then it turned out when they saw the final version of the film, they said, no, we couldn't screen this film.
Yeah.
And of course, the director was really mad. And then we were very curious because it was all in the media. So then we approached the director. And then we talked about it and said, well, we are going to do this festival. Would you like your film to be screened? And said, oh, yeah, definitely. So then we screened the film, and everybody was happy because finally they could see the film.
Sure, sure.
Even if it's really limited audience. But we screened it 3 times, and it's always full house. And the director was happy, we are happy, and the audience were happy. So everybody, like, yeah.
Which film was this?
It's called I'm That Man and Woman.
Mm.
It's a short film of 30 minutes, supposedly for TV.
Uh-huh.
But then, yeah, in the end...
And the director?
The director is Arya Kusuma Atmaja, I think. That's his name. So, but Arya is always known also for his really controversial work, usually. He always goes independent way. He doesn't want to be funded by some big companies, for example.
Mm.
So, and since then, when we started that festival, now there are some Indonesian filmmakers who happen to have an idea of making a queer film, suddenly know it's like, okay, well, we can screen it in this festival because now we know that we can screen it. Before, we could only have the idea. It's like, okay, maybe if I make this film, but how we are going to show the film? We don't have a channel to do it. Yeah.
How does how about other films from the region? Like from Malaysia, from other places, is that, what kind of reaction do those films get?
We also, like, I was really lucky in the second year when I happened to get the contact of a producer in Malaysia called Lina Tan.
Mm-hmm.
So she was producing a lot of short films, and some of them are queers. So I started emailing her, and she came up with all these titles and that you can all screen because it's all banned in Malaysia. And I really want these films to be shown so everybody knows that we do have some queer films from Malaysia, but we don't know. Now it's all banned, so we don't know how we are going to show these films. So then it went to my festival. I think there are 5 short films and one feature film on AIDS, basically.
Mm.
We screened them all, and then not many people went because Indonesia and Malaysia is a little bit... there's nothing wrong, but Indonesian people don't go to see Malaysian films. But Malaysian films go and see Indonesian films.
Malaysians do go.
Yeah. But Indonesians don't. They always think like Malay films are worse than Indonesian films, so they don't go. But anyway, it still got some exposure.
Mm-hmm.
By being in our festival in the end, some other festivals in the world ask for that film.
Mm-hmm.
So then in the end, those films travel to Italy, and then it was in Switzerland. It was in Berlin, it was in the United States, so finally it went everywhere. And
wow, that's good.
Lina Tan was really happy because now like people could think like, okay, Malaysian does also have some queer films from the region. Yeah.
Are the films made by queer... What is a queer film? I guess that's a good question.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, some people say... I mean, I know this came up... the UCI hosts the Vietnamese Film Festival, mm-hmm. and they always ask, what is a Vietnamese film? And does it have to be made by a Vietnamese, or does the content have to be Vietnamese? Or if the content's not Vietnamese, does it have to be made by a Vietnamese? And so what are these adjectives?
It's always a debate anyway. I think one film is always tried to be determined what nationality is the film. Sometimes it comes from the director. If the director is from that country, then it can be considered that it's a film from that country. But also sometimes if it's set there and the money comes from there, even if the director is not from there, then it can be considered also the film from that country. But the queer film so far, also there's no fixed definition.
So it's mainly queer content?
It's mainly queer content. You can say Brokeback Mountain is a queer film. Even the director is not queer, even the scriptwriter is not queer, but it is really about queer people. So if you see in big festivals, even like in Frameline or in Outfest, also you can see like some films, even they don't really have a queer content, but it's more like it's a queer culture, they call it. Like something
American
campy,
queer
something musical.
Yeah.
Even if it's a straight love story, they still consider it it's a queer film.
It's a queer sensibility, whatever.
Yeah,
that is.
Exactly. It's queer culture. It's so queer. It's so camp, but it's not really. Sure. Yeah.
About homosexuality or anything like that.
Yeah.
Necessarily.
Yeah. Well, but what we do, we try not to screen those kind of films as well. We just don't go for something camp and. Yeah, we consider it queer if it's really like has a queer content or mm-hmm. one of the main characters at least is queer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How many of the directors that you have filmed are actually gay or lesbian?
You mean
about the films that you have shown? Are most of the directors also?
Yes. Gay? Yeah. I think. About 97% are queer.
Wow.
The directors.
So are they finding, you mentioned the Indonesian directors, and mm-hmm. then for the others in the region, are they, for Malaysia is a problem, is it similar in other countries in that region, in Southeast Asia? Is it, would you generalize and say that it's also a problem in other parts to get distribution or get places to show your film?
Yeah, I think in Southeast Asia we almost have the same problems everywhere. It's difficult to try to screen an independent film in the mm. cinema, in the public cinema.
Sure.
And also, I think at least now in Malaysia you can do it. You can screen your films in the cinema, even if it's in the form of Betacam SP or Mini DV. Mm. You can screen in the Philippines now. There's one cinema you can do that.
Oh, wow.
In Singapore also, and now in Jakarta they are building it. Hopefully by then we can all screen like an independent film in the end in the cinema. But but apart from that, also there's censorship, and we face the same, almost the same problems with censorship board in Southeast Asia.
Mm.
So it's really, you have to be careful how to do your films,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
how to convey the message of your films, not to try to be really like sensitive with the censorship, because it might be cut or it might be banned completely. Like, for example, Royston Tan's films mm-hmm. always are problems in Singapore since the beginning, when he first made 15, a short film about the 15-year-old delinquents in Singapore. Then Singaporean government, of course, tried to deny, saying that no, Singaporeans are all at least middle upper class. There's no such slums. There are no 15-year-old kind of people like this.
Yeah, they were like attacking Mandarin speaking students.
Yeah.
Or being too elitist or whatever.
Exactly.
Beating them up because they spoke Fukienese.
Yeah.
And, but how, I understood that film actually was funded somewhat later on in the process by the government. Singapore Film Board had something to do with it at some point.
Singapore Film Commission always try to help a little bit.
Yeah.
They try to chip in some money for every Singaporean film production, but it doesn't mean that it will pass the censorship anyway. it's a different body.
Yeah, I just interviewed the director of Solos, and he said that they're changing the rules in Singapore, and they're putting the film board and the censorship board into one institution. So it'll be the same institution.
That will be exciting to see how they're going to work together.
It'll be the one institution. They report to each other or whatever. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Royston Tan's new film, 881, is a musical.
Uh-huh.
And everybody thought it will pass the censorship easily because it's musical and it's nothing really it's not criticizing anything. But then it's almost banned because it's using Hokkien dialect 80% in the films. And the Singaporean government said at least a Singaporean film has to be in English or in Mandarin.
Like a cultural imperialism.
Yeah, it's like they don't agree. Like if you make a film like with 80% Hokkien dialect,
yeah,
it needs to be in English or in Mandarin.
Yeah. I mean, that's
so
crazy.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
for whatever reasons they can come up with.
Yeah, it's this whole identity thing, you know, with Singapore. They want to identify as Singaporeans, and
yeah,
I think one way to do it is the language. And, so they resist anything else as a threat.
We used to have that problem as well in the past, like in the 90s, like all English names or Chinese names for shops, restaurants, whatever, have to be changed into Indonesian language.
Oh, yeah.
So then, yeah, it's becoming ridiculous. You have all these suddenly restaurants names who used to be like Seafew becoming like really
long names.
Yeah, names in Indonesian language. It doesn't feel the same. That's the same with the Indonesian films. But recently, like, you can have even an English title for an Indonesian film.
Oh, wow.
And it's okay. They are not going to do anything. So since last year, we got a film called Long Road to Heaven, which is actually about the Bali bombing. Recently, we have a film called Get Married. In English, like that, Get Married, because we use it a lot anyway in Jakarta. We use a lot of English words here and there, so Get Married is a phrase that we use a lot. And there will be one Quickie Express coming out, so it's all like, it's all these English terms that they are allowing it at the moment.
Wow. It's partly globalization, I suppose.
Yeah, maybe.
But
of course, some people don't agree. There are a lot of heated discussion also. It's like, how come it has to be in English?
On your conference, you have a website? The conference, the festival website?
Yes.
Is there a blog there where people can read?
No, there is no blog at the moment. It's a very simple website because we don't have time to really put our thoughts in it. But basically, it's only on informations on the film screenings and a little bit of the history of the festival and who are the organizers. But in the future, we are trying to put like a forum so people can just leave comments or things like that. We are planning to do that.
How about the in terms of archiving? What do you think is the status of film archives in Southeast Asia?
The film archive in Indonesia especially is really, really how can I put it? Depressing. They don't really take care of the films, because they don't have the money as well. The government stopped giving money to this archive film archive organizations, so they are actually dying and they are really relying on personal donations. So it's really sad to see that there are so many films who are going to be ruined in the end.
They are just being
placed in a basement of the building in the can with water dripping on it.
And the humidity must be horrendous.
The humidity is horrible. In Indonesia, it's 98%. So you can imagine, like, in 1 week, it can be rotten completely already.
And moldy and whatever, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, we know that in Singapore now they have the Asian Film Archive,
yes.
And they are very active about it. So, what I'm trying to do is try to suggest to all the filmmakers to send at least their film to Asian Film Archive
and because
to be preserved there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. How about the distribution of the films on DVD? Is that becoming more common or not? It's still hard to get it, create a DVD and then distribute it.
Oh, that's very easy, actually.
Easy,
yeah, they can do it themselves. They can do it independently, or they can go to a DVD companies who there are plenty of them.
But is there distribution outlet?
Mm.
Is there one that features independent films from the region or from Indonesia?
It's really quite in a guerrilla way that. They have to do it themselves. They have to submit the films in this record shop and then just check every month how many has been sold or not.
How about your own festival? Do you try to keep an archive of all the other?
Yes, we are trying to keep an archive of all the films that we have screened, and basically every film that we ask the permission to screen, especially in the form of DVDs, we will keep them.
Yeah.
We ask the permission to do it, and mostly they give it to us.
Yeah, 35 you have to return. Right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that would be too expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we try to get the DVD version of it to.
Oh, great.
Yeah, to keep. Yeah. But still, yeah, we don't have the money yet to completely seriously into archiving. So at the moment, it's just piling up also in my house.
this new thing that I heard about this week, I went to a recently. There was a meeting at UCLA on Vietnamese film stuff, and the person from the Hawaii Film Festival that was helping publish this English language edition of this book about Vietnamese cinema has put up a website where festival films from Vietnam and other countries in Asia are being streamed, and people can libraries can subscribe as a subscribing to a magazine, but this is an online site, and it would be accessible by IP address so that a computer. Like a whole campus, people can watch the films on their little screen. It would be they're just starting out, and they have like maybe 10 or a dozen Vietnamese films that they want to stream. Some films from Pacific Island, Pacific Islands, and some Chinese films even.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a. It's called iFilms : Asia and Pacific. It's just getting off the ground. So that seems to be one way to get the audience in a university, especially. Individuals can also pay. They have to subscribe because it's a kind of a self-supporting thing. And it's $150 for an individual a year. Libraries would have to pay more.
Right. Well, that can be done with countries that has already a stable internet connection, not like in Indonesia, for example.
It wouldn't stream well.
It wouldn't stream well. It could be like disconnect halfway. Because a lot of people also start to think that way. A lot of film companies say, okay, maybe we can start like doing this video streaming or video on demand through the internet.
Yeah.
But then they realize they still can't do it in Indonesia because it's either so slow or it's not stable, so once you pay it and probably download halfway and then suddenly it's dead.
It'll probably collapse the system if everybody tries to get on. And
So it's still not possible, basically, in Indonesia.
Because I heard that in many countries in Asia, the preferred mode is still like a CD or a DVD, a VCD or a DVD.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that's like even for regular distribution of other stuff.
Yeah, they prefer the physical form of it rather than, and because also in Indonesia, not many people have computers at home.
Sure,
we don't own a computer. Yeah. I don't have a computer at home.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you use a laptop?
I use a laptop.
Yeah.
But I don't have like a proper one at home where I can really like download things.
And so people don't have, like here they have cable connections?
Yes.
So it's rarer.
In Indonesia, like even in Jakarta, the capital, like even the cable, it depends on the area where you are. Mm,
sure.
Some of them, the cable still can't reach them. For me, I have a laptop. I can get online, but I don't have an internet connection at home, for example.
So it wouldn't work there.
It wouldn't work.
I also realized that I was reading some discussion, some material on streaming video, and it seems like you can stream for a small screen, like your computer screen, but that's totally different from trying to screen the same thing in theater, because then everything gets enlarge and you can see the imperfections.
The resolution is different.
Definitely. So
internet resolution is only 72 dpi, and actually the at least for the cinema is 300 dpi.
At least. And this color saturation, all that stuff,
Should
be all messed up.
It's completely
different. So but it might be a way for at least in, you know, people who have access to academia and, you know, some big universities might subscribe, and then students could write about these films.
True.
So it seems the way to do, one way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I still would like to get the DVDs. I'm actually a film librarian here, and so I'm always trying to look for places. And I was surprised, actually, in Malaysia, I went to, was it Borders or one of the stores, or Tower Records. They still have Tower Records in over there, when actually they went bankrupt here in the US, and they closed all the stores in the US for Tower, and you could find some independent films sometimes on the shelves. So it's maybe because it was in Kuala Lumpur, in capital city, maybe that's more likely.
I think it's mostly in the capital city only. If you go to
and I know in There were some films that I saw in HMV, which is a British, is that a British company?
Yes.
And they have it in Hong Kong and some other places.
In Singapore.
And so they had picked up some Singapore, even a Singapore film.
Yeah, they do.
Joint production between Vietnam and Singapore. There's some war film and that I had never seen before. So sometimes I think it's, I mean, what you're doing is great, because you actually going to the source and getting the stuff. Do you find that, apart from that scheduling, the strategy problem you mentioned about, you know, some people want to hold off on it after they show, until after they show it at Busan or something, do you find most people are very open to sharing?
It's getting more and more. The thing is, with Indonesian audience, they are very shy usually. They don't really talk that much, but now it's becoming quite outspoken. They are more comfortable. The festival has been going on for 6 years. If they've been going to our festival since the first year, now they are used to it. So they are more vocal in expressing their opinions, and also what comes out from this Q Film Festival was actually there's another organization being set up about 2 years ago on queer advocacy. So
queer
advocacy. So they really set up a non-profit organization in helping the advocacy of queer people in Indonesia.
Oh, wow.
Especially in terms of crime cases, like murders of some transvestites or pedophile cases.
Yeah.
So they're working on that field,
yeah.
But really, like, yeah, specifically for queer people.
So are these funded, are these, is the... These are activists in the area.
Yeah,
who are organizing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because they saw all these films from our festival and they are quite inspired and say, okay, why don't we meet? We made an organization really like the political one, like for the gay movement.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
In the end, now they are running for 2 years now already.
So it's in terms of you know, a lot of times people here have this idea that. Things happen over there because something happens here, you know, like gay liberation, whatever. What do you think of that? I mean, or do you think local conditions dictate what happens?
I guess it's a bit of both. With the with the internet now, you can really access information from everywhere.
Sure, for sure.
Well, maybe not in China, but they banned some sites. But in Indonesia, you are free to access all the information.
Yeah, I was telling the, some of my Chinese chat friends about the Singapore film, Solos, and they couldn't get to the site.
So I see.
I was surprised.
Yeah, but it's
maybe
true.
It was just down. It happened to be down. So, you know, it could be just too much traffic.
No, but yeah, sometimes, yeah, you can't really access in China.
Yeah, it's... It depends,
Yeah, it depends on what sites.
Yeah.
But I guess, in any case, like, you really have to see locally as well the needs there.
Sure.
Like, how you're going to cater this with the local taste or with the local needs, basically. So you just have to adjust.
Is there an effort to get people to come out, or is that... not considered important, or what do you think? Does your festival help people come out, you think?
Yes, definitely. There are some people, the thing is, our festival is not only about film screenings. We do organize like
panels,
like discussions. So we got this last time we had five discussion events on different things. One is about coming out. One is about queer representation in Indonesian films. We got about queer culture and metrosexuality, for example. So it's all that we are trying to discuss during the festival. So there are a lot of talks going on with the local artists over there.
Yeah.
So.
In terms of the queer content, is there, how much of it is interracial or inter-ethnic, or is it mostly, in terms of the stuff you've shown, I mean, is it mostly like Asian or whatever, subgroup, whatever?
I guess it's mostly like that, because people are trying to focus on one thing only, mostly. It's very rare that you get a film about interracial relationship. It's very, very rare. As far as I remember, I think we screened Drift before, about an Asian American and a white guy.
Right.
But apart from that, I think it's mostly like Asian, but even like Indonesian, for example, they're from different ethnics, so...
Could be Indonesian, Chinese, and Chinese, Indonesian.
No, so far no, but it's mostly like... they're not there yet, in that sense, but different ethnics, like Indonesian, Javanese, and Sumatranese,
example. Yeah,
so
yeah,
that's
yeah,
also yeah, quite yeah, different, even if they're both Muslims.
Sure.
So things like that.
Yeah.
Or more like upper class and lower class.
Yeah. There was a listserv that I just got into a discussion. Somebody had asked about whether there was a Vietnamese Chinese relationship in any recent Vietnamese film. You know, between Chinese, Vietnamese, and the Vietnamese in Vietnam. This is a Vietnamese film, and I mentioned this film that actually Vietnam has submitted for its Academy Award, the white dress, this white silk dress, white dress, and they actually it's also a upper class, a lower class dichotomy. This woman has to go work for a rich patriarch, and it's a Chinese patriarch who's quite old. He's probably 90s or something, and he's in a wheelchair, and they show her as a wet nurse, but she's not the wet nurse for somebody infant. She's a wet nurse for this old man, and there's this whole chamber set up. It's like a glory hole for heterosexuals, and she sticks her nipples into this hole, and then this old guy on the other side is basically, you know, playing with it, but the whole depiction is like demonizing, saying that how she has to be abused and has to work for this, you know, kind of eccentric kind of pervert,
right,
that gets off on this kind of interaction, because in the film the guy actually speaks Cantonese, the older guy, and so it just won. I thought it was funny that, or maybe interesting, that it won the Golden something, some award in China.
All right.
Best foreign film at a festival in China a few weeks ago. and it's, but even though there was all this kind of anti-Chinese sentiment in there, but it could be also people saw it as a anti-class thing, that this was a landlord class thing like that too. So it's interesting how, how ethnic tensions get depicted within film, and it could be interpreted differently depending on where you see it.
Yeah.
Or who sees it, obviously.
Yeah.
That was our interview with John Bedelu, who is founder and creator of the Q Film Festival in Jakarta and other cities in the Indonesian archipelago. This is Dan Zhang with Subversity here on KCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on the show were not necessarily those of the Regents of the University of California, nor the management of KUCI.